Tonight, in our exploration of the Dhamma, I want to explore two key ways or two techniques or two activities for gaining wisdom. And those activities or those techniques are that of inquiry and that of reflection. Inquiry and reflection. Inquiry and reflection. Both inquiry and reflection utilize mindfulness, they utilize intention, and they utilize directed attention. And I'll explain what each of those words mean as we go along here. Yet inquiry and reflection are something other than mindfulness. They're not the same as mindfulness. They're not the same as directed attention. They're not the same as intention. They're different, and at least in my practice, and I will explain those differences for you. Because I was making this distinction, I thought, you know, I think I'll check with my colleagues and just make sure that my own practice is not so eccentric that it would not be related. So I called a couple of my colleagues, teaching colleagues, this afternoon and said what I was doing. And both of them made the same distinction between inquiry and reflection. And in my own practice, and my own living in daily life, I find this distinction important. And one of the things that I have come to learn through the years is that some people don't necessarily make a distinction, and some people therefore may not do very much of one or the other. They may not do much inquiry, or they may not do much reflection, because it's just never come to their attention that, oh, each of these are separate activities. So again, this is my experience with this. I'm not saying everyone would have the same view, and as you hear this, you may go, no, I don't really think they're that different. Fine. Trying to convince anyone, but rather to share experience. And again, for those of you who are new, our big emphasis on Sunday evening is living the Dharma in daily life. So this distinction can be very important in daily life, but it also shows up in our meditation practice, because there's times in our meditation practice that a teacher may suggest to you, or you may on your own want to do some inquiry practice, or that you may want to actually, instead of just choiceless awareness of the mindfulness practice, you deliberately take a topic and you're reflecting on that topic. These are skillful means. They are very legitimate parts of practice. So mindfulness, just to start at the beginning, what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is a particular way of relating to what's arising in this moment, a particular way of relating to the here and now. It's a particular way that we meet the experience, and it's characterized by being present in this moment, so that we're being present. We're choosing to be present for what's here. Our consciousness is registering things whether we're present or not. We all know that. One thing after another, in the visual field and the hearing field, taste, body sensation, all of these different sense gates, thoughts, mental activity, emotions, they're all registering whether we're mindful of them or not. And oftentimes, we're not so mindful. And so this first part of mindfulness is that we are being present. The second part is that we have a clear intention to fully receive it. That is, we're choosing to be present for the here and now of this. We're making that as a choice. And we're making it as a choice that's not contingent on whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. We want to show up. We want to be here for what's here. Now, what we do once we're here and we go, oh, this is unpleasant, it may be smart to take our minds off of it. But we're starting with what is in mindfulness. And we're doing so with caring more about experiencing it, knowing it, than controlling it. in that first moment of being mindful. We want to know what's true for us. We want to know our experience. We want to be alive to our experience more than we want to control it in that first moment. This moment is like this. A sleepy leg is like this. A leg that's asleep. Wanting mind is like this. Excited mind is like this. Growling belly is like this. We want to be alive. We want to be present for it as it is, rather than this controlling, rather than having some other way. So there's a kind of equanimity that we're developing around the moment. And this gives us choice. This gives us a sense of calm. It gives us a sense of continuity. It's quite a large thing. It, in the end, when I say choice, when we're mindful in this way, it gives us the choice to choose non-suffering over suffering. And that's no small thing. So that's mindfulness. Intention is the value-based way of relating to the arising moment. It's value-based. It's our values. So we intend, this is the second of the Buddha's Eightfold Path, we intend to meet the moment with certain qualities. We can have different goals for this moment. Getting to work, getting my teeth brushed, getting the dishes done. But the way we would meet this moment, that is meeting ourselves, meeting others in this moment, if others are present, meeting the conditions, that is one of whatever series of values that you might have. The Buddha suggests in that second the second of the Eightfold Path, of meeting the moment with non-harming, an intention of non-harming to oneself and others, an intention of kindness to oneself and another, and an intention of renunciation to the degree necessary to meet those first two values. Other places he lists other things. So whatever your values are, that you're going to meet this moment. That you're going to meet this moment. You can't have 20 values that you're holding in your mind at a time, so being realistic about that. But an intentional life is based that way. And I make this distinction more strongly than many of my colleagues about the difference between intention and goals, because we often get confused where we will have one set of values that are at play towards one goal and a different set towards another. I find that problematic in my own life, in my own practice. One's either being kind or not kind. One doesn't get to not be kind because this person that we're dealing with right now we think is a mean person or is not treating us right or whatever. That we're developing a way of living that's not contingent on conditions. And we utilize mindfulness for that reason. And so our peace, our sense of well-being comes because of that we're comfortable, we are grounded, we have refuge in our intentional living. And we're present for it. And so there's continuity and we feel authentic. And there's an empowerment to that, rather than organizing ourselves around this condition and then that condition, this goal, then that goal, which are always changing and which are not very reliable, and also which conditions tend to bring up the various hindrances of the mind that the Buddha talked about, which is greed, the various kinds of wanting mind, various kinds of aversions, to include anger and ill will, but also restlessness and worry and sloth and torpor and doubt. So these conditions we treat as not so reliable. But we're mindful of the conditions and we're mindful of how we respond. And we respond by directing attention. So we direct attention in such a way that allows us to meet this moment skillfully. It's directed attention. We are able to place our attention through practice to where we want it under ever more challenging conditions. So something that used to make us really mad, we direct our attention to notice, oh, look at what this is doing to the mind. This is suffering. What do I really care about? Who do I really want to be? We direct our attention in such a way that it allows us not to get swept away in that anger or whatever it may be. This is the role of directed attention. With understanding without intention doesn't take a form, it doesn't start to go anywhere. But without directed attention, the rubber never meets the road. And that directed attention, until it becomes habitual, then you don't really need to direct your attention so much anymore for that particular area. For most of us, we're works in progress, so therefore we've got many, many years or lifetimes ahead of directing attention. Maybe you're one of the fortunate ones. So that's these three, and you can ask about those later on if you want. One last thing to say about directed attention is that it does provide balance and wisdom and a kind of skill. So with mindfulness, we can get to believing that our mindfulness means that we're supposed to always be able to control. We're always supposed to be able to direct the mind. But that's not the point. The point is being present and then responding as best as one is able. That's the practice, as best as one able. There was Jack Kornfeld was... No, that wasn't Jack. It was someone else that was telling me today about Ajahn Brahm saying that that mindfulness is not a psychological development practice. It's a practice towards liberation. And he's here visiting. I was quite happy to have him saying that. This is a poem called Stay by a person who's been here to this sangha a few times. It's active at Spirit Rock, named Rob Cook. My dog was not a particularly quick study. My dog was not a particularly quick study. The action verbs weren't a problem. Fetch, he picked up right away. And though come arrived a bit more slowly, it did eventually succumb to bribes. But commands of stillness seemed hopeless. He couldn't stand being told to sit. And for a long time, I wasn't getting anywhere with stay. Eventually, though, he learned them all. And now he is reliably obedient. And it makes him happy to please me, his master. I have this absurd idea that my mind should be like that, obedient to my command. But see how it runs around, fetching things at random. And how that thing I wanted to tell you, that thought I so clearly told to stay put, has wandered off and is nowhere to be found. So we practice being mindful of the way the mind is. The mind becomes more pliant, becomes more cooperative, but we are not trying to conquer the mind in that way. We're in a relationship to the mind. In that relationship, we sometimes are confounded by some aspect of us, of our personality, of our behavior, or our relationship with someone, or their relationship with us, their behavior, where we go, what's happening, or what did happen? How do I to understand this? What is this? What's going on here? Those kinds of things. Or we got to make a decision about our lives. Or we got to make a decision about our practice. Or is this the practice for me? How should I practice? How much time does it need of my life? How much time am I willing to give it? Or it's about work. Should I find another job? And so on and so forth. There's many times that we need to have clarity about our inner selves or clarity about our situation in the world in some way. All of us need this at times. And that's where inquiry and reflection come in. There will be times in a retreat where someone may invite you to have inquiry around, they'll give you a particular question to ask over and over again just to yourself to notice, Or here and or in a retreat, you may be put into a dyad. You and another person do an inquiry together. We do that a lot in our training retreats, where we're doing an inquiry. So what is inquiry? According to the dictionaries, it's to seek information, to ask about, seek to know, search into, investigate. And I view inquiry as part of the seven factors of awakening, that investigation. So first there's mindfulness, then from mindfulness comes investigation, and the investigation generates energy, and then these other factors get moved along through those first three. So I view inquiry as a kind of investigation. It is active. There's an asking. There's a probing with inquiry. So it's we're asking. We're wanting to know. Well, how do I feel about this? There's a you know, looking at it in various ways. It's a doing. It's an active doing, and the goal is knowing something that you don't know yet. This is from a poem, an excerpt from a poem by David White. Be taught now among the trees and rocks how the discarded is woven into shelter. Learn the way things hidden and unspoken slowly proclaim their voice in the world. Find that far inward symmetry to all outward appearances. Apprentice yourself to yourself. Begin to welcome back all you sent away. Be a new annunciation. Make yourself a door through which to be hospitable even to the stranger in you. So this inquiry is one way that we do this, that we move into a deeper understanding with ourselves. And we get comfortable with, on the one hand, not knowing. I don't know. If we knew, we would not have to inquire. But that we're comfortable with the not knowing, and we are also become comfortable and skillful with inquiring, with seeking to know, with investigation. So this probing, this, what is this? This is so like on a retreat, Ajahn Sumedho will say, who's having this thought? And that's the inquiry. And so you're sitting there watching whatever thought you're having, but then you're over and over again with that thought, who's having this thought? You keep looking for the who is having the thought. That's a form of inquiry. On some of our other situations, our training retreats, we will ask for them to do a repeating question. So the question might be, what's blocking my being more present? So tell me what's blocking you being more present right now. And you say, well, my body's tired. Thank you. What's blocking you being present right now? Well, my mind's restless. What's blocking you being present right now? I really feel present right now. I don't feel as though anything's blocking. It's a repeated inquiry into, and there's many other forms of this. There's the monologue where someone sits and listens to you doing a kind of free association for 3 minutes, so on and so forth. It's a kind of inquiry. Seeking information, searching into. In our daily lives, we're doing inquiry in terms of like, what's going on here? What should I do? What's the right decision here? It's an active inquiry. We're looking at this. Those of you who are regulars know that this is my year that I'm not being active in leadership at Spirit Rock. My year started only about January 19th, by the way. It was my last meeting at Spirit Rock, which I then promptly got sick on January 20th for 2.5 weeks, just by chance, of course. And but this is a year for since I'm not active, that I have time to, among other things, do inquiry. And one of the things in which I'm doing inquiry around is, what do I want to do with my time during the next 7 years? Do I want to continue doing what I was doing? Do I want to change it in small ways, large ways? It's a question. I'm involved in an inquiry. I'm involved in an investigation about this. So that's I'm using this as a personal example because it's sometimes easier when you actually hear someone make it real in terms of their life. You can make it real in your life. So you might think about right now about this last week. Have you been done any sort of inquiry at work or in your relationship or about yourself? Have you been active in that way? Like, what would I mean about inquiry? We'll take questions about this in just a moment. Reflection, on the other hand, means to think carefully, to remember with thoughtful consideration, to think quietly and calmly. To me, reflection is, in a way, letting yourself catch up with yourself. You're reflecting. You're not doing. It's not a doing activity in the same way, but it is active, but it's got a more passive aspect. There's more stillness in it. Mary Oliver reflects it this way. Today I'm flying low and I'm not saying a word. I'm letting all the voodoos of ambition sleep. Nice phrase, huh? Today I'm flying low and I'm not saying a word. I'm letting all the voodoos of ambition sleep. The world goes on as it must. The bees in the garden rumbling a little. The fish leaping. The gnats getting eaten and so forth. But I'm taking the day off. Quiet as a feather. I hardly move. Though really, I'm traveling a terrific distance. Stillness. One of the doors into the temple. Stillness. One of the doors into the temple. For me, may not be the same for you, but for me, reflection has this stillness, this quietness, this calmness, this feeling of letting knowing, letting experience come to us. It has a great deal to do with remembering, but remembering that which we've not necessarily ever bothered to place into our consciousness fully. We're catching up with ourselves. This just reflecting on this. So it's a kind of introspective contemplation, and it can be of the contents. We can be reflecting on the contents of our mind or the quality of our mind or our thoughts or on remembered experiences. We're reflecting. Oftentimes, when I have to make a decision, that's the very first thing I do. I reflect. Before I do inquiry, I reflect. Or if for some reason I don't know enough to start reflecting yet, I will do inquiry, and then I say, no, I just need to reflect on this. People say, let's make a decision. Like, no, let's reflect on it a while. And so what do I mean by that reflecting? I mean letting the parts that are quieter let themselves be known, letting that small voice of intuition be heard. Oftentimes, it means that there was a felt sense to a situation, a felt sense of feeling to a situation, and I haven't yet taken time to let it fully blossom. In my current situation, which is every bit of a month old and only like 10 days of healthy reflection, one of the things that is happening with me is these 7 years of almost constant work. I'm having a reiteration of various experiences because I'm just available. I'm thinking about, you know, I spent all this time doing this. I'm just reflecting on that, and it turns out I have all these different feelings about having done that I didn't know one way or the other. I had not taken time to let these feelings come into the present moment. This is what I mean by catching up with ourselves. This makes sense to you. So in the same way, when one says, oh, well, I think I'm going to do this. So that's, oh, I've inquired of this man, and this is what I think I care about. Then you stop and you reflect on it. Okay, you've done your inquiry. Now you just reflect. So how does that feel? At first it seems like really right, because you've done this inquiry and your ego was all involved. But you live with something for a week, and it starts to feel different. It's very different when you catch up with yourself, when you're really settled into it. This has been so useful for me in my life, because I've made a lot of rather large decisions that involved huge amounts of risk, where I was turning my life one way and then a few years later turning it a whole nother way, with having to give up everything that I'd built in order to try this, and then again and again. So it's been very useful, this process, to me. And there's ways that I've been very skillful at doing it, and in areas of my life, not so skillful. Maybe that's true for you too. Maybe you can do inquiry in some parts really well, and do reflection in some parts really well, but not others. I don't know. I don't know your life in this way. So a reflection is receptive, inviting. It does have a doing, but the doing is being available to receive. It's a doing that would be more related to being. So inquiry is more related to doing for knowledge. There's doing, you know. You're out there doing something with the goal of knowledge. It's not doing for its own sake. Doing for its own sake is doing the dishes. What gets done are the dishes. When you're doing inquiry, what gets done is knowledge. So there's doing, knowing, and being. These are three ways, actually, of relating. And so the inquiry has a doing quality, but then its product is knowing. Reflection has a being quality to it, and its result is a kind of understanding. It's not like, at least in my experience, it's not the same thing. It's not like new knowledge. It's like the knowledge. Experience is known in a different way. It's known in a different way. So, with that as a background, one thing about reflection, so I'll just give you a couple examples. When you're reflecting, it's like you're waiting for something to emerge. So that you could reflect and say, so how does this really feel? I've said I'm going to take this new job, you know, down in Silicon Valley. How does this feel? You're not poking at it in the way you would with inquiry. You're just feeling into it. It's receptive in this way. Or it may be, is there some priority that in my life that's wanting to emerge here? You're not actively looking. You're just reflecting on this. So this is right now. This is in terms of my thinking about my next 7 years. I am involved in inquiry and reflection. But as I said, it's more reflective right now. Like, so what was this last 7 years like? What was this? What was my experience? What wants to be known in my experience? I gave 7 years unstinting to service. I mean, over the top in many ways. And so what does that feel like now? It had its own experience then that I was mindful of, having to do with service, having to do with letting go, non-selfing, all this kind of practice. But Now, what does it feel like when I'm not involved in it, when I'm not active to it? What does it feel like? What does it feel like? This can be true for you in a relationship. It can be true to you after someone that you're really close to that's died, where you reflect just on your relationship with that person. And many times in those kinds of reflection, you discover nuances to your relationship to that person who has died that you really come to appreciate. Questions about inquiry, questions about reflection, and then I want to ask you another thing about that. But first, just if you have a question for me.
What about desire? What about desire?
Desire? What do you mean exactly?
Well, you talked about intention.
Yes.
And so to have an intention means you have to desire something.
Yes.
You have to want.
Yes. So you could do both inquiry about, well, if I'm going to live a value-based life, what are my values? That would be a form of inquiry. When I do a weekend on intentionality, one of the things that I do, I come in with this value inventory. There's 3 pages of values, and people mark their values and go through a whole process. Actually, you can do that online if you go to Dharma Wisdom. You can take that value inventory exercise. It's a kind of inquiry. So let's suppose you've done that, and now you say, "Oh, these are the 3 values." There's a whole process of that, but these are the 3 values, or this is the 1 value I'm going to cultivate this year. Intention: whatever I do, I'm going to be truthful in all of my activity. Whatever my goals are, whatever I'm doing, I'm going to be a truthful person. So that's, you've done that, and then you reflect on, so what does that really mean to be truthful? There's a reflection. What does that really mean? And you're waiting for that knowing to arise. Like, what do I mean when I say I'm going to be a truthful person? A lot of times when people choose something to cultivate as part of practice, they don't take that time to reflect and say, what does that really mean? So right speech is a great example of that. Right speech sounds clear enough. Saying what's true, what's useful, what's timely. Well, what does that really mean? And you just reflect, you let it, you see what wants to be known. Anyone else about this?
So during the first sit, I had this feeling of tension arise, and I directed my attention to it, and in the body, and even as I was following along with the guidance. And so I was paying attention to it. I would have thought that was inquiry. And then I looked at the feeling of where I tried to identify, tried to figure out where it was in the body, and then look at the emotional experience of it as well. Was I inquiring or reflecting?
Well, you get to have your own definitions of these things, but from my view, you were inquiring. When you became aware there was tension in the body, and you were, which, by the way, that is following the instructions, what you did. It wasn't just in addition to, it was in the heart of the instructions. You were going, oh, well, what is this tension? That is inquiry. What is the nature of this tension? You're probing, you're circumambulating, I like to talk about that. You're trying to, you're deliberately doing a doing to understand it. You're directing attention towards it and considering various things. You're watching it. You're using your mindfulness to see it in different ways as you inquire about it. You're experimenting. You're saying, well, is it this? Is it that? That's a kind of inquiry by my use of the word.
Whether or not you get an answer.
Whether or not you get an answer. And oftentimes, it's the inquiry that's the valuable, not the answer. Because, I mean, you're going to have other times of being tense in the body for different reasons. But the inquiry allows you to have this other relationship to it where you're saying, oh, I don't have to be this. I'm not identified with this. It's just tension in the body. It's not a me and mine. It's tension in the body. So the very inquiry is helping you be mindful of it. It's keeping you be mindful. You're developing a kind of kindness to yourself through this. So very useful, this inquiry, in that way.
And no reflection.
And the reflection, you could, if the reflection would have been, I'm just going to be with this. I'm just going to be with this tension. Just see what. I'm not inquiring. I'm hanging out with it. See what happens.
Thank you.
So, I would like to hear from you. If you utilize either of these, inquiry or reflection, in your practice or in your daily life, as you so beautifully told us, and just any experience you have about it.
I had an experience over the weekend, actually. I was supposed to get...
Okay, well, I guess we'll use the mic. There's a request.
I thought I had a loud voice.
We also have a number of people listen on tape, so...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I had two people this weekend were supposed to get in touch with me via email or call me about some things, some of it personal, some of it work-related, and I never heard from them, and I, you know, this afternoon I started to get a little bit upset about it, and, you know, wanted to send an email basically saying, oh, you never got in touch with me, so forget it, kind of thing, you know, reactive. Not, you know, I was going to do it really passive-aggressively, not like...
right.
Not
be clever in your aggression.
Yeah. Oh, I see, you must be really busy, but, you know... And so I'm walking the dog, and I'm thinking, well, why would you want to do that? Like, why would you want to cut them off when you really do want to be connected with them and you really do want to hear from them? And why would you assume that you're the only thing going on with them this weekend because, you know, they have other things going on? And so I kind of talked my way around it, and then I just realized I was being really self-centered and kind of insecure about the relationships, and I've done this in the past and kind of pushed people away in that way. And it just really dawned on me, like, really very clearly that the right thing to do was to give them space to come around when they were ready and not to push them into being in my realm. And it was really perfect. It wasn't like a feel sorry for me
right,
moment.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they don't care, and so, oh, poor me, or they're being this. It was just very, very clear.
So I would say that what you did was inquiry when you were saying, but now why, since you care about this, why are you doing this? But there was also a degree of reflection where you, that there was some, you had this thing in your head and you were living with it and you were going, but wait. That moment of, but wait, was the reflection. You caught up with yourself. You didn't act. You gave yourself a time as you walked the dog, fortunate for the dog here again in our evening, that you had time, and there was a reflective moment there. And you go, but wait a minute. I do want to be in contact with these people. And then you did this whole thing about, well, and you freed yourself from a reactive mind state. So very good use of that. Thank you. What behind?
There have been a number of... Is this on?
Yes.
There have been a number of times in my life where I had to make a major decision that was binary, you know, about leaving New York and coming to California, quitting a job, taking a job. It turns out that I was very good at making lists of the pros and the cons, and to me that's the inquiry, like, what about this and what about that? But the reflection came when I threw out the list because something in my gut told me what to do.
Yes.
And so it's that moment when the list doesn't matter anymore, because almost every time I went against what the list said to do.
Mm.
But it was important to go through the process of making the list.
It's very important.
It's really good to see all the pros and the cons
right.
of both. But then sitting with it. And a good friend once told me a trick when you're trying to decide something like that. She said, flip a coin and watch your reaction. And the coin. You don't have to listen to the reaction, but watch your reaction. Because if you really flip the coin and it says you have to do A, you'll know if you really want to do B.
Sometimes. Yes, because having employed that technique myself, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But yes, that's really a good example too, that the inquiry allowed you to get the information, the knowledge, from which then to reflect, because you had included more of yourself, you were more aligned with the reality of the situation by doing the inquiry, and then you reflected, and in that reflection, that quiet knowing came up, the felt sense of it, and the felt sense is often different, But it's so important to have included everything. So, yes. And you two have something. Gentleman first.
Hi. As I think about it, I use reflection quite a bit in my work. When I'm doing a project, or especially with writing, I'll think about what it is I want to write, but it isn't until I get a felt sense of knowing this is exactly what I want to say and this is exactly how I want to say it, then I know that I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I think we'll go over to this side of the room. If we can just pass it over to the other side of the room, just pass and back to the back row. Bill, if you'll pick it up and take it to Brenda.
First of all, can you hear me?
Yes.
I want to thank you for raising this topic because I have used inquiry in my practice, and in reflecting about it just now, I realized that it was very effective, that I haven't used it very often. And twice when I've used it, I've asked a question about Dhamma practice, and the first time I received an answer right away, a remarkable answer. And the second time, I didn't receive an answer for a long time, but I did receive it. So I'm reflecting that I need to do that more. I tend to use reflection more frequently than inquiry. And my most recent reflection was yesterday. I was reflecting on a Dhamma talk that Ajahn Brahm gave. And in the Dhamma talks, I've been in two of his talks, and they were quite jovial, actually. And so I wasn't really focusing with the Dhamma mind, and I didn't. And then I realized from reflection that actually I gained something from it, but it wasn't until I put my mind into reflecting on what he said and relating it to my own direct experience that I had an insight that was valuable.
Thank you for that. I remember I've done a talk in here on the Venerable Sumedho saying that when you're being mindful, you're the Buddha knowing the Dhamma. Well, I reflected on that so many times. What does that mean? It wasn't so clear. And what was I prepared to accept that it might mean and all? It's very useful, this reflection. And I was not doing inquiry about, oh, does it mean or this, that. I would ask my question, what does this mean? And I've just sort of lived with it. I wasn't suggesting possibilities to myself. I was wanting the knowing to emerge in a kind of immanence way, just from the reflection. We're going to stop with those because of our time here.